This is the July 2 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net. He's in Windsor, Illinois. Naomi Bloom joins us from TotalFarmMarketing.com out of West Bend, Wisconsin. And Shane Holtorf is here from LogicAg.com. He is in Alta, Iowa. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Online on demand at willag.org. That's willag.org. Going into this holiday weekend, I'd like to start by asking each of you to give me an update on crop conditions in your area. We'll start, Shane Holtorf, out west from us, at least, with you. You are in Alta, Iowa. Can you tell us where that is and then give us an update?
Alta, Iowa, it's right north of Highway 20. We're about 90 miles east of Sioux City and about 60 miles west of Fort Dodge is where we're located. And in this general area, crops are off to about as good of a start as we've seen in the last really 5 to 10 years. We've been kind of getting nursed on little rains here and there. And things are off to a really good start. If you get out of this general, I'm going to call it 5 or 6 county area, we've seen a lot more rain kind of in northwest Iowa. Things could slow down for them up there. And it seems like every rain that they've had has been accompanied by some winds or some hail. You know, generally speaking, things still look pretty good for what they're dealing with up there. And so I would say we're off to a pretty darn optimistic start here in northwest Iowa.
Naomi Bloom at TotalFarmMarketing.com in West Bend, Wisconsin. You're a bit north of Milwaukee. Tell me what conditions are like where you live.
Really remarkable. So we had a slow start to our planting, but since then things have just been going fantastic. We've had timely rain. The heat that occurred this week was actually needed for our crops, and every morning I walk my dog and we go by a soybean field and we go by a cornfield, and the amount of growth just in this week is amazing. Crop looks absolutely spectacular. The corn right now is about thigh high, which is pretty normal for us for where we are in Wisconsin. The soybean field, the rows have totally filled in and it just looks lush. It's off to a great start here in Wisconsin.
Matt Bennett in Windsor, Illinois, not too far from Mattoon. Give me an update on conditions in your part of the world. And do you talk to about Mattoon being in East Central Illinois or Charleston Mattoon area, or do you use a different moniker for your area?
I mean, yeah, a lot of people say East Central. You know, obviously they had a tornado go through there. There's been significant amount of hail in this part of the world compared to what we normally see. But I think our crop looks good overall on the pattern tiled stuff. You know, it could be a record type crop. The problem is anything that isn't pattern tiled, you know, we've averaged anywhere from 7 to 10+ inches on most of the farm ground in this immediate area in the month of June. And so I know there's a lot of growers that are pretty concerned about disease and denitrification. You get south of us and they've had even more rain than what we have. But overall, I think the corn crop's good. I wouldn't call it a record at this stage of the game. Soybeans, a lot of yellow beans, of course. They don't like wet feet. But I do think there's a chance they'll come out of that. Of course, disease will be a little bit of a concern there as well. But yeah, we've had too much of a good thing in a lot of places this spring, early summer time frame. But at the same time, with all that being said, I think we're sitting in a decent spot.
Shane Holtorf, it was just 2 days ago, and it seems like much longer ago, that the grain stocks report was released by the United States Department of Agriculture. Historically, farmers in your area and to the west and north of you have stored much more grain on the farm for longer periods of time, partly because of the drier conditions and it's easier to store, than those in the eastern part of the Corn Belt. When you looked at those grain stocks numbers, what did they tell you about the marketplace?
Yeah, it was really interesting. you know, I would say that's where we got our nice little pleasant surprise to kind of give this corn market a kick in the shorts. I would say that it doesn't necessarily align with what we've seen here in Northwest Iowa or what our basis would tell us. You know, we actually railed a lot of corn and beans out of this neck of the woods, which hasn't happened in quite some time. And as you mentioned, you know, we're talking to a lot of farmers that are kind of kicking themselves today because of how much grain they still have on farm that is unpriced. And basis generally shows it. We haven't seen the basis improvements into, you know, the July timeframe like we saw, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. So I think they're in a competition with themselves right now, you know, to continue kicking this out of their bins here. I'm not overly optimistic on basis in our neck of the woods. I think there's plenty of crops still being stored, to your point.
Matt Bennett, when you look across the whole of the Corn Belt for the old crop corn, does basis differ widely from one side to the other?
Yeah, no question about it. You know, you get east of us very far, parts of Indiana and Ohio, and of course, it's a totally different story. It's very unfortunate, you know, in his part of the world and north, you know, whenever you get into the Dakotas, you know, unfortunately, I've talked to some growers that are sub-350 corn. Quite a few of them are in that position in that part of the world, whereas you go, you know, east of us, parts of Indiana, Ohio, you know, you'll hear some plus 20s and plus 30s and even better than that the farther east you go. So, of course, that eastern part of the U.S. is a corn deficit area. You got a lot of hogs, a lot of chickens to feed out in that part of the world. And so they've got to figure out a way to get that price elevated enough. And that rising tide lifts a lot of boats east of us. But there's no doubt there's been a big disparity, you know, in what basis looks like from east to west this year. In our part of the world, basis has been decent. You know, of course, we've got the river that has been a pretty decent draw with a strong export program. You know, but we're just kind of right in the middle of everything. There's a lot of overs at times, but at the same time, that you'd have to get to the processor to do something like that. And I would say an even type basis, option price type stuff has been fairly common, especially whenever you get to the end user.
Naomi Bloom, a little more local to you. Wisconsin is dairy country, and that along with the northeastern part of Iowa tends to grow a lot more corn on corn. It gets used locally to feed the dairy industry. What are you seeing in the way of basis in those areas? And then if you want to talk about the grain stocks report more broadly, you may.
So basis here is kind of more of a traditional wider for this time of year. And especially in our part of Wisconsin, we had real good crops last year. So we are seeing that basis stay a little bit wider, but kind of, I would say, like I said, like normal wide for this time of year, 40 cents under. So with the report, you know, just the thing about it, so even though it was short-term supportive for the standpoint that the stocks number of 5.295 billion bushels, it was, you know, over 100, about 115 million bushels below expectations. So that gave us some support. But for a quarterly stocks report for the June 1st stocks, it still was near an eight-year high. So that just is kind of that reminder that we still have sufficient supplies out there and grain yet that needs to find its way to town here before harvest. So if we can see any kind of a continued rally into next week, I just want to have, you know, producers be mindful that that might be an opportunity to be a seller. I look back at the last 10 years and years that we had big carryout after the June 30th report and then into 4th of July. In 2017, we had a big carryout and we had a two-week rally after the June 30th report of about 42 cents. 2019, we had also about a two-week rally. The rally that year was 44 cents, but then as soon as that July WASD report came out, a couple weeks after that, then prices drifted lower into the harvest low. So just keep that in mind. Seasonals might take over, and if the United States has decent weather outlook when we come back from 4th of July weekend, you know, just prices might start to go back on the defensive, so keep an eye on it.
Let's stay with old crop corn, particularly for the moment. We'll get to new crop in just a bit. But Shane Holthorf, because you're in that area and there is a lot of corn in storage still, more than maybe usual, What are you telling producers about what they should do?
Yeah, I think, Naomi's point there about the 42-cent rally is really well taken. And I think that's just make sure we get these offers out and working. This market has certainly showed us that it's not afraid to move in either direction and fairly quickly. And so, set up to protect, protect yourself if we see these rallies. And, one thing that we're fortunate about in our general area is, you and I have talked about this before, is if you just stand in my driveway and draw a 60-mile circle around it, I believe there's 8 ethanol plants. And ethanol demand's been really good. They're making money. And so, we're just thankful that the basis is what it is based upon those. So, yeah, long story short, get your offers in. I think basis is as good as we're going to see it. So reward a futures rally if it comes.
And Matt Bennett, how does your you talk to your producers from the east to the west differently about this old crop and what they need to do yet?
Yeah, obviously, if you're farther east, you still have some opportunities. The thing is that I'm with these guys. The thing is you definitely need some different news as far as old crops concerned to be able to change the trajectory of kind of what we're looking at right now. We know we're going to have all kinds of corn to get to harvest. I do think that you're going to start to change the scope of discussion once you start talking to the new crop balance sheet. Yes, I understand what Naomi's saying. You could, if you look historically, take this market lower after your July WASDE. There's a decent chance, of course, you're going to pull 100 out of both old crop and new crop, or in that range, if you will. And considering they really slashed demand for new crop in the May WASDE, you got to remember what the corn market's done since the May WASDE. We've done nothing but go lower, and so we're not doing anything to ration demand whatsoever. So if USDA is vastly too low on new crop demand, I'll tell you what, any sort of weather issue could definitely be a supportive type deal on new crop. I just don't think that old crop's going to be able to follow along a whole lot, because I'm afraid that if you rally much, basis is going to widen out.
So tell me about the new crop as it's related to the acreage report, Matt. Continue down this line and what the supply and demand tables you think might look like going into the fall.
Yeah, I mean, you could make a case for with the 95.3 acreage with yield. They're not probably going to mess with yield anytime soon. I know the crop's not rated near as good as a year ago, but it's not enough that they're going to make any adjustments probably before August. And so you're probably looking, you can make a case for like a 1.8 type carry on new crop, but you got to remember they really slashed export demand. And this is at a time whenever we know exports for this year are probably too low. You look at ethanol, for instance, this year, and you could make the case the USDA is a little too high. Yes, ethanol has been good, but the thing is, Todd, is that, yeah, you came up with $100 million less. So either disappearance was better on some end, or maybe they missed the 25 crop by a little bit. I mean, it's understandable considering the kind of acres and yield we were talking about. So the bottom line, though, is that we've got less corn available than what we kind of thought that we did. It's still enough. Don't get me wrong. It's just that you got to start working that into the new crop balance sheet. And so I'll tell you what, if you would end up coming in with something closer to a 180 than a 185, it starts to get fairly snug, particularly if you hold exports constant from this year to next year. So I do think that if a person is in a position where, hey, I didn't get enough corn sold, but I've got good storage possibilities at home, I'll tell you what, I do think that there could be some opportunities post-harvest this year, because I do think this is going to tighten up quite a bit.
Naomi, I have a what if for you, but let's start with where you are on the supply and demand tables for new crop for corn.
Well, I'm pretty similar to Matt as far as the acreage number. Now we know for next Friday's report, I agree they're probably going to keep the yield just unchanged at 183. It's a little too soon to say it's much better or much worse. And then, we'll see, I think, that carry-in number come down a little bit. But I'm cautious if they make a lot of changes to new crop demand at the moment. I think the ending result is that carry-out for new crop probably shows up near 1.9, maybe a little bit lower. And with that, it's a comfortable number. And the market, just on that report data, if we still have a carryout closer to that 2 billion bushel at 1.9, that's not necessarily a bullish argument. It would have to come into something happening on the side, some sort of dramatic weather event here in the United States or somewhere else around the world. My thought process is that the funds then see the report on Friday the 10th. If it's, you know, has more of a negative tone to it, they go back into sell mode and push prices lower into August. And just a reminder that the December corn futures for the 2025 year, so last year, when they finally bottomed in August, they were at 390. In 2024, when Dease corn finally bottomed in August, it was closer to 385. December corn today on the board at 441.5. So there could still be this risk of downside pressure here in the short term, especially after that WASDE report comes out. But one other thing I do agree with Matt on is that when we see a harvest low, I think it's going to be a very significant harvest low, because I think that there's enough friendly things coming ahead for 2027 that prices could have a pretty decent rally later on. So the tricky thing is for producers who are in any sort of like a cash flow or a storage crunch. So if you have to move the grain at harvest and you're selling it at harvest, make sure you're looking at re-ownership strategies to get you into well into 2027 for some upside potential. But again, in the very short term, history, seasonals suggest that after the July WASDE, corn prices, old crop and new crop, do have that tendency to slide lower. And history would suggest potentially it could be 40 to 50 cents lower from here.
The Trump administration has decided not to sign on to the USMCA again, that as of July 1. That puts it into mandatory reviews every 1 year at this point. I'm wondering on the what if side, and Shane, you and Naomi both can take this up. I'll, Naomi, let you do a little bit with this first. What happens if Canada and or Mexico decides to play a little hardball and either Mexico doesn't take as much corn and turns to, say, Brazil, and or Canada finds a different source for ethanol in the near term to the marketplace, and what impact that might have? And is this something we should worry about, Naomi?
It is something to be mindful of, because those are definitely scenarios that could occur. We've seen it in years past where Mexico will try to do a little bit of a flex at the United States, and they will turn to Brazil to purchase corn just to say, hey, United States, we know that there's other places that we can buy from. So we want, of course, Mexico to be buying our corn, our best trade partner that way. And regarding the ethanol, Canada, a huge buyer of our U.S. ethanol. So we have some issues there to be mindful of. It creates a little bit of uncertainty. I don't think that the USDA would address it on any upcoming USDA reports in the short term, but that uncertainty just, you know, makes you wonder, you know, where the demand ultimately will come into play. So we do have to be mindful of that agreement and what comes from it in the coming weeks or months.
Shane, does the ethanol get railed from your area to Canada?
Yeah, it's kind of split. So it's interesting. The ethanol plants on the northern side of our territories typically would get railed up there. And the southern and the eastern part tend to find their way towards the European markets.
Is this a concern for them yet?
You know, I don't think so. You know, as we've kind of seen on this political side of things lately, there's just an awful lot of posturing ahead of negotiations. And I think that's the point that we're at so far. Now we've seen some decent escalations throughout these negotiations over the past couple years in this administration. So things could certainly change. But, you know, the folks that I've talked to today, the demand is still healthy. The infrastructure is there to, you know, have us be Canada's number one supplier of ethanol. We're the path of least resistance. And one could say the same for corn down to Mexico.
Finally, let's turn your attention to soybeans. We only have a couple of minutes left. I'll ask each of you to deal with new crop. We'll start with Matt Bennett.
Yeah, I mean, in all honesty, beans have been just so resilient. It's been pretty impressive, quite frankly. Yes, we've got good domestic demand. I don't want to take up too much time here, but I mean, I do feel like there could be some downside here if this bean crop starts to straighten out. I don't think that we're going to look at any less production out of Brazil on soybeans. So I'd be a little bit cautious as to snub my nose at 1150 type Nova beans. Personally, if they work for you, I think locking in worst case scenario is probably something you need to be considering.
Naomi Bloom, your thoughts on new crop soybean?
If we do not get any bullish news from the WASDE report next week, I think you see seasonal selling come in and technical selling. There is a very distinct head and shoulders formation on the November daily chart. If it comes to fruition, if we do not get any friendly news in the very short term, it points to a potential downside of 1050, so essentially a retest of the January lows.
And finally, Shane Holtorf, your thoughts.
Yeah, I would agree with both of those. You know, I say thank God for a really strong crush. You know, soybean oil has been kind of keeping this the bean market propped up. And, you know, the market desperately wants a headline as it relates to China purchasing additional new crop beans. And I think if we don't get that, I would have to be in line with some of Naomi's numbers she just said.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online on demand at willag.org, willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Matt Bennett, Naomi Bloom, and Shane Holtorf. I'm Todd Gleason.
From the Illinois State Water Survey at the University of Illinois Prairie Research Institute, this is Illinois State Climatologist Trent Ford. Temperatures this week packed a punch, ranging from a high 70s in northern Illinois to the low 80s in southern Illinois, between 1 and 4 degrees above average. This week featured our first real summer heat wave across the state, as high temperatures reached in the mid-90s, with very high humidity pushing peak heat index values well over 100. However, that persistent humidity and very warm nights were the truly remarkable feature of this heat wave. Chicago saw more than 60 consecutive hours with heat index values over 80 degrees, creating some very stifling nighttime weather. The ridge that brought us the heat also mostly kept rainfall away this week. 7-day totals range from virtually nothing in the Quad Cities to just under 4 inches in southeast Illinois. The relatively dry end of June was quite a contrast to the month as a whole, which ended up being a top 5 wettest June on record statewide and the third wettest on record in both Bloomington Normal and Galesburg. The calmer, albeit hot weather this week also brought us a 5-day stretch without any storm reports in Illinois, which was the longest such stretch in the state since May. Looking ahead, the heat and likely that storm report streak will both come to an end as we move into the weekend. The ridge will move east, and behind it will be a more disturbed pattern with highs in the 80s and more frequent chances of thunderstorms and showers. The latest 7-day forecast from the National Weather Service has the northern half of the state picking up between 0.5 inch and 2 inches, while southern Illinois will likely see mostly less than 0.5 inch this coming week. Farther out, the outlooks for mid-July show slightly higher chances of warmer weather coming back, with best odds of wetter than normal weather, too. Look for that disturbed, warmer, and stormy weather to appear off and on throughout this, the climatologically hottest month of the year in Illinois. This is Illinois State Climatologist Trent Ford wishing everyone a happy, healthy holiday weekend.